Welcome. The following presentation from Answers in CME is part of an educational activity titled Taking the Flare Out of Atopic Dermatitis, the Role of Systemic Therapies in Children. To access the full program and supporting materials, visit www.answersincme.com/ZBK860. This activity is supported by an educational grant from Sanofi Genzyme and Regeneron Pharmaceuticals.
Hello, I'm Dr. Amy Pallard, Chair of Dermatology at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. In this program, I'll be looking at the role of systemic therapies in children with atopic dermatitis. There are many components to the burden of atopic dermatitis. One is the comorbidities. Most commonly, we're talking about the atopic comorbidities, allergic rhinitis, asthma, and food allergies in particular. I also want to emphasize the role of infection. There's a huge burden in this group with moderate to severe disease, Staph aureus infections in particular, but also viral infections. But then, of course, there's the impact of this incredibly itchy disease, the impact of itch and pain, the impact on sleep, the impact on productivity, whether we're talking about school productivity or the impact on the parental productivity when you've got a child who has a chronic disease, like moderate to severe atopic dermatitis. And then starting very early in life, and certainly by teenage years, huge impacts on mental health and self-esteem. And finally, there's that unpredictability of flares. The concept of quality of life is a relatively new measure in dermatology, only discussed in the past 15 or 20 years. Before this, if you go into the older literature, people were using just simple monitoring of disease-type tools. When we're thinking about this younger age group in particular, we're trying to capture so many aspects of quality of life, including sleep deprivation, unrelenting itch and pain, and mounting frustrations as parents realize how limited the therapies may be for children. All of us who take care of children with atopic dermatitis understand that therapy must take a stepwise approach. First, for all patients with atopic dermatitis, we use the basics of good moisturization, particularly following bathing, as well as avoiding irritants and other triggers. When there is disease activity with redness and itch, we'll introduce anti-inflammatory medications. For those who have moderate to severe disease, we'll more commonly start with a much stronger potency of topical corticosteroid and calm the disease down, moving with maintenance to a milder agent or less frequent application. Phototherapy is a possibility, of course, as a next step beyond topicals, but can be inconvenient for many families. So we move on to systemic therapy. When we've optimized the therapy and we've been aggressive enough in management, we then need to think about whether moving to a systemic agent, whether an immunosuppressant or an immune-modifying agent that's a biologic, is appropriate. As doctors, we are cautious. We're particularly worried about safety in children. When we have a patient with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis, we really have to think whether we have optimized their therapy. Have we really treated aggressively enough with topicals to try to see if we can improve the atopic dermatitis satisfactorily? Have we considered alternative diagnoses that may be confounding responses? Is adherence an issue for the patient or the family? And if we still say yes, and there is no adherence issue, especially if the atopic dermatitis is impairing quality of life, we need to consider systemic therapy. We have to individualize care in everyone we treat, and that means sitting and listening. These children don't have a quick visit, especially on the first visit. We have to understand the goals and expectations of the family. We listen to what's been tried. We understand what may be succeeding and what may not be succeeding. Socioeconomic level may also dictate what treatment is prescribed, depending on what is affordable and accessible for the patient and family. We have to think about adherence. Some won't adhere because it's inconvenient. Using topical therapy can also be a burden. It's really important for us as doctors to understand whether what we're telling our families is going to work for that family. Of course, everybody comes in looking for a cure. This is currently not a curable disease. It's important that the family and patient understand the ups and downs. We have to try to explain to them in simple terms what we know about what causes atopic dermatitis, its unpredictable course, its various impacts, and the risks and benefits of treatment options. The family and patient need to understand our recommendation, and we have to help with that through listening and explaining. Finally, we have to find the right treatment plan for that individual and that family. We need to make sure that our recommendations can take them to the next visit. Through our use of electronic medical records, we can more easily provide personalized patient materials and mention other support systems, including the National Eczema Association. We must educate and arm our families so that they can work with us to make shared decision-making. They need to understand not just what happens acutely, but very importantly, what to do when things turn around in order to maintain control safely. In March 2017, the FDA approved our first biologic for atopic dermatitis, dupilumab. Its initial indication was for adults, and later it was approved for adolescents. Most recently, it's been approved for children aged 6 to 11 years. The safety and efficacy of dupilumab are similar across the different age groups. I'm showing you here the efficacy of dupilumab plus topical corticosteroid in children aged 6 to 11 years, who were by definition inadequately controlled and had severe atopic dermatitis. 33% of them were able to achieve clear or almost clear at week 16. The second graph shows the less stringent endpoint of EASI 75, which means a 75% or better improvement in the eczema area and severity index score. Approximately 70% of patients achieved EASI 75 at week 16, compared with 27% of patients receiving placebo. In the open label extension, we can see that the efficacy was maintained for a full year. But of course, long-term data are mostly for safety, and there were no surprises. There were no new red flags revealed in the long-term studies. Here we show the phase 3 trial results of 16 weeks of dupilumab in patients 6 months to under 6 years of age with moderate to severe disease. Again, it included patients on low potency topical corticosteroids with inadequately controlled atopic dermatitis. This graph shows the change in daily worst itch. And again, we see the significant difference between placebo and dupilumab treatment at this age, with about a 50% reduction in the worst daily itch in these young children who were treated with dupilumab. Here's the EASI score. You can see that 53% of these very young children with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis who were on the dupilumab achieved EASI 75 at week 16, compared to 11% of those young children receiving placebo. Here we're looking at patients aged 6 to 11 years again who had one or more treatment-associated adverse events. Serious treatment-associated adverse events were low, 1.7% in placebo, 1.7% in the weight-based dupilumab dosed group of children who were above 30 to 60 kilograms, and zero with serious treatment-associated adverse events in the every four-week dupilumab dosed group of children 15 to 30 kilo. Both skin and overall infections were numerically lower in children treated with dupilumab than the placebo group. Herpes simplex viruses are somewhat less numerically in these children as well. But as for adults and adolescents, conjunctivitis and injection site reactions are the two dupilumab-related adverse events. Although in general, we've seen less conjunctivitis in children than in adults, there may be more injection site reactions characterized by redness and tenderness in younger patients, aged 6 months to 5 years. The safety profile looks very similar. We also see conjunctivitis with a decrease in skin infections. Interestingly, here the injection site reactions are not increased even though these are the youngest children. Conjunctivitis has been a troublesome issue for a small group of patients. In the trials, it was seen on the order of about 9 or 10% in the 16-week data in adults, and then a little higher in the 52-week data, almost as high as 16%. In children, the incidence seems a bit lower. Generally speaking, the first thing I like for patients to do is to let me know if they develop problems. They have to keep an eye on their eyes and report any dryness, itching, or redness. We can use rewetting drops or ointments to manage this adverse event, starting with the over-the-counter artificial tears. However, it's important to try to get them preservative-free because some of the preservatives in eye drops can actually cause allergic reactions. That's about as far as I like to go personally, but I'll check in on them every few days or a week, and if they see it's still an issue, I will make sure that they see an ophthalmologist. However, not all ophthalmologists are even aware of this adverse event. I will often try to reach out and talk to the ophthalmologist and sometimes send them a paper if they're unfamiliar with the dupilumab-induced conjunctivitis. Ophthalmologists will treat with a variety of topicals, anything from steroid eye drops to some of the non-steroidal, including cyclosporin eye drops. But if it gets bad enough, we do need to make a decision together with the ophthalmologist about interrupting treatment. Fortunately, this adverse event is rare, and in general, patients don't have to stop the use of the dupilumab. There are a number of different agents that are currently being investigated in pediatric patients with atopic dermatitis. Lebrikizumab and tralokinumab are IL-13 inhibitors that are very similar but with different binding sites. Nemolizumab is an IL-31 receptor inhibitor. Many times interleukin-31 is referred to as the master itch cytokine. So nemolizumab may be more broadly applicable for itch, and it's been studied in a number of different indications beyond atopic dermatitis, like prurigo nodularis. Upadacitinib is approved for adolescents 12 and above and currently in trials for younger children. Upadacitinib is on label as a second-line drug after the use of at least one biologic. JAK inhibitors have a very rapid onset of action. Improvement is usually seen in weeks and full results in months. Before starting treatment with JAK inhibitors, we have to rule out immunodeficiency and screen for viral hepatitis. Additionally, we need to be monitoring blood counts because there can be at least some transient neutropenia. We also need to look at the complete metabolic profile, lipid panel, and creatine phosphokinase. There is no consensus about how often we need to repeat those labs, but they do need to be done periodically after 1 or 3 months. Serious adverse events seem to be rare, but need to be monitored. In terms of side effects, lebrikizumab and tralokinumab, the interleukin-13 inhibitors, are similar to other biologics we've mentioned. Nemolizumab seems to be well tolerated overall, but we do see some issues like abdominal pain, diarrhea, back pain, perhaps an increased risk of asthma, and some edema. The JAK inhibitor, upadacitinib, has a different safety profile. In the adolescent trials, acne was most common, but also reported were upper respiratory tract infections, nasopharyngitis, and some headaches. Creatine phosphokinase or liver transaminases were uncommonly elevated, but we need to watch out for that and for transient reductions in blood counts. I also want to mention abrocitinib, another JAK1 selective inhibitor. While not yet on the market for pediatric patients, abrocitinib has completed testing in adolescents, and I expect will be approved for this age group soon. Abrocitinib's primary adverse event is nausea and sometimes vomiting, much less acne than with upadacitinib. Finally, I want to add that the JAK inhibitors all have black box warnings because of the more worrisome adverse events that occurred with increased frequency in patients treated with the broad JAK inhibitor, tofacitinib for rheumatoid arthritis, but not yet seen with atopic dermatitis. With the evolving treatment landscape for atopic dermatitis, shared decision-making will continue to play an important role in treating patients with atopic dermatitis, especially pediatric patients, as these treatments become available for this age group.
Thank you for listening. please visit www.answersincme.com/ZBK860 to view all program materials, complete the post test, and get a certificate.